Hey everybody, it's Jason Klom here. Before we get started, I just wanted to point out, I recorded this a while back and sort of remembered, I was thinking about it as I before I ever edited it, I had a feeling that maybe I pronounced the name of this album Live. And actually, we have a debate at the beginning. Is it Live or Live? I could have sworn I heard somebody say Live. It's Live. That is the obvious point of the album title. So forgive the discussion at the beginning. When I do these Skype calls, it kind of throws everything up in the air, and I question all of my preconceived and well understood and researched notions. That said, please enjoy this episode with Emily Ann Peterson, who's a great musician. She also has a great podcast called Bare Naked Bravery. I think you'll enjoy this episode. It is about one of the more recent albums we've ever done, but it was released on vinyl. And again, it is pronounced Live for obvious reasons. So with all that said, please enjoy this episode of Comedy on Vinyl. I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 2013. The album is Tig Notaro Live. The artist, of course, Tig Notaro, and my guest is Emily Ann Peterson. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So, tell the audience a little bit about yourself, about what you do, and then tell me why you picked this album.
So, I am a singer-songwriter and a teaching artist, and I have a podcast, and it's called Bare Naked Bravery. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as I was preparing for this interview and kind of rewatching some of my favorite moments from Tig's career, I realized that one of the reasons why I love her stuff so much is that she takes what I am so fascinated by, which is bravery and courage and vulnerability, and she puts this like this brilliant yet very realistic colored lens on top of all of it and manages to make you laugh and cry at the same time. And I think it's really admirable. It's a skill I don't think a lot of us have.
Yeah, no, it's so, for those who don't know anything about this album, it was recorded, I think it became an album kind of impromptu because it was a show. She was the opening part of a show, and she had basically only very recently discovered that she 100% was sure she had cancer. And she opens with that to, obviously, because she's so dry, she opens with that to laughter. And people are like, okay, she's going an interesting angle this time. And I, you know, anybody who didn't know would have been like, well, it's a weird way to go, but
she says it like multiple times in a row too, because she can tell that the audience is thinking that it's a joke, and then she keeps saying it and the laughter keeps diminishing.
Yeah.
And then she just says, I have cancer. And everyone's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you do with that?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't know how to react. And I also like, though, that her instincts as a comedian, though, are to immediately have fun with that idea, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that's kind of the genius of it. I mean, other than, oh, hell, I just went through not just cancer, but two other giant tragedies. No, three. So a total of four really big things in such a short amount of time. You know, other than that, I mean, that's, yeah, I really like that. That's her angle, seems to be at the beginning. She's doing this thing that seems to be that the joke seems to be, if you didn't know better, the joke is, well, let's just sort of, you know, isn't it funny that this person's talking about this? And then the joke really is actually, isn't it odd that comedians take this angle on stuff that is just so deep and so dark? And I think she's having fun with the convention of making fun of something that dark too. It's pretty layered.
Well, and I also love how she ends the whole thing too, with the joke about the bee going down the freeway, because it's just that juxtaposition between the morose reality of the comedy that she just revealed to all of us, and then follows it up with some jokes that some other comedians might pull just out of the hat, you know?
Yeah.
And the juxtaposition between the two of them makes the B joke so innocent mm-hmm. and also silly.
Yeah. And this wonderful catharsis. And she was smart to set it up throughout the whole thing too. She's like, well, I'm not going to be doing this B joke. I'm here doing this. And then it was perfect when she talked to her audience and the audience was like, do the B joke. And it was just very sweet.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. She's great. I love her.
When did you first hear this or see it? I don't know if you saw it live or.
Well, so I have listened to that. I think the first time I listened to that was on a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, as a musician, whenever I do any touring, there's a lot of road trips. There's a lot of time in the car between cities.
Sure.
And I think I listened to it just through, like, it had gone viral.
Okay.
And I saw that it was, you know, about that I could squeeze it into my drive. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll listen to this. And I was in tears and laughing all by myself, driving down the freeway, listening to this thing. It was really a great moment.
Yeah. That's,
memories.
I can imagine being on, well, I can't imagine actually being on like that. Cause I listened to it on the way home from work. I had it pretty simple, but when you're dealing with the emotion sometimes of being a performer and being out on the road and then having that hit you, like, and also like, wow, this person did this with their art. It's pretty shocking.
I love listening and seeing and experiencing other artists' careers,
mm-hmm.
And other artists' performances, and seeing what they put out there, because I think that just because, you know, Tig's art is comedy and mine is music and conversation and communication, but I have a lot to learn from her. And yeah. And any other comedian as well, you know, the way that comedians have that give and take between audiences, that is something that I have so much to learn from you guys in that respect. And it's that's one of the reasons why I love listening to comedians when I'm on tours, because I get to have those like mini like performance lessons on like, oh, when the audience is just not giving you what you are needing from them, here are some options and how you can take the next detour.
Yeah. It's got to
so,
be.
Yeah.
Is it not harder though as a musician? And I could be totally wrong on this. Harder because you have a track, and that track is I have a song. Like I have to follow this track and finish this crap out. And I say crap colloquially, but finish yes. the stuff I'm doing out before I really, you know, before I have to re-engage. Or is there a way to re-engage mid-song?
You can re-engage mid-song. I mean, I think some of it has to do with your dynamics. It also depends on the song as well. But you know, if you're playing with really good musicians or you have really excellent musicians backing you up, as a lead performer, you can take the boat wherever you want to steer it as long as the boat has that kind of capacity. So some songs are more like the Titanic where it's like hard to steer it mid trip.
Yeah.
But if you're by yourself, that's like riding around in a canoe, you can steer that thing wherever you want it to go. So, as long as you want to go there.
Right. Right.
So yeah, you can completely re-engage an audience. If you have enough practice and skills, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, one of the things that Tig does really well is she's really comfortable with awkward moments and with that, with vulnerability is part of her craft, which is what is required if you're going to try to re-engage an audience as a musician.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, the more boundaries you have up or the more set plans you have, the harder it is to break that. But the thinner your boundaries are, the easier it is to engage with your audience or feel your audience, I should say.
Tate Notaro.
Hello. Good evening. Hello. I have cancer. How are you? Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you? It's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer. Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer. God. Oh my God. It's weird because with humor, the equation is tragedy plus time equals comedy. I am just at tragedy right now. That's just where I am in the equation.
I like, we've had musicians on before, and, you know, musicians who have a particular interest in comedy. I mean, that's not an unusual thing.
Right.
And, you know, much more intelligent people than I am have made the connection, but, you know, of rhythm and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, songs between, and songs and jokes and songs and sets. So I guess I'm not surprised that, you know, to have another musician who's interested in comedy, but I'm always interested to find out what your first exposure was to comedy, and or especially audio comedy, if you grew up with records that had comedy on them, anything like that.
Yeah, you know, I did not at all. I mean, I think like maybe Home Improvement was the closest exposure that I had to comedy. Way back when, in JTT days. I think as I've gotten older, I have enjoyed comedy more and more, because it's for the reasons I already explained, because I really admire comedians for getting up there and just talking for 20 plus minutes straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
it is really ballsy to get up there and do that. You know, as a songwriter, like you said, I get up there and I have my 10 things I want to say, or my 10 songs that I want to share, and I already know what they are. Those things are come easier to me than just like the mid in between song banter that would happen. That the in between song banter is often the most difficult part of a performance for a musician, just because they don't know what to say, you know?
Right.
Yeah. When I do shows, though, I am usually doing house concerts or like really small venues, not because I really like doing the smaller venues. But one of the things that I do is I always open up the show and I like break that fourth wall and almost immediately ask the audience if they have any questions for me. And usually after the first time I mention that as an option, like the audience is like, what? I don't know. I don't know what to say. What kind of, you know, like, or I'll usually get a question like, where are you from? Or something like that.
Yeah.
But just a simple, where are you from? Or a simple, hey, do you guys have any questions? Sometimes that's enough to get to that point that Tig gets to with her audiences, that, you know, that point of exchange.
Yeah.
Back and forth. So it makes for some really fun shows, that's for sure.
See, that's really interesting beyond what I think, and nothing wrong with people who do this, of course, but like the typical between song banter is going to be, here's the history of the song, here's what the song means, but
right,
you've given them an opportunity to to do something new with it, which is, that's pretty interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a live show where somebody did that.
I will say that sometimes it bites you in the ass.
Uh-huh.
Because there was one show I was opening for a guy who had a very devout following, mm-hmm. of fans, and a lot of them were older. There was this one Russian lady, and she was sitting in like the front row, front and center. Like, she was stoked for this concert. And I like opened the audience up for questions, and she raised her hand immediately, and she just goes, I'm not going to say the artist's name because I don't want to do that. Uh-huh. But she just goes, when is he coming on?
Oh, no.
And I just said, well, when I'm done with the next six songs.
Uh-huh. So, holy cow.
And you could totally feel how everyone else in the room, except for her, felt so awkward.
Holy wow. Have you ever opened for, do you only open for music acts, or have you ever opened for a comedy act?
I haven't done a comedy act open. That would be interesting for sure.
Yeah.
I'd be game.
Yeah. No, I feel like somebody who goes out of their way to do what you do, to engage the audience, even in that small way. You know, I think the one thing where this is the impression I get is that most stand-ups or any kind of type of comedian, they often they can pick an act that sometimes they're like a local act, you know, who they may not even know all that well. And I feel like it sometimes throws it off kilter. But there are also times when you can be a musician, open for a comedian. Usually it has to be a funny comedian, but it would be an interesting. Usually it's the opposite. Usually you've got a stand-up opening for a band. And I actually had a guest on a week or two ago who talked about opening for the Ramones and then just basically being drenched in beer. And now that I'm thinking about it, he may not have told that story on my podcast. It might have been on another podcast. But either way, it's a good story. And I wonder if it's ever been done where a quote-unquote, like a straight comedian, a straight musician who doesn't really do comedy songs opens for a stand-up or opens for another. I don't know if that's ever been done, but I think it would be interesting.
Hey, I'm game to try. If there are comedians listening, they can totally send me an email. We can make it happen.
That'd be awesome.
We can try it out. I have like one or two songs that end up coming across as funny. They uh-huh. weren't never intended to be super funny. Actually, I take that back. There was one song, and it's on YouTube. You can see the demo version of me doing it like in my home studio. I have one song all about online dating.
Uh-huh.
And it's just verse after verse of like all the types of guys that are out there.
Oh no.
So I'm waiting for some male musician friend to come do a, like a rebuttal song about all the women that are on online dating, because I'm sure it's equally bad on that side as well. But it's interesting. I have another friend, Kai Alfred Hillig. He is an excellent songwriter. He's from the Tacoma, Washington area, like myself. And his some really raw, honest songs. And he and I were talking the other day about some of his material, and he was saying, you know, when he first came out with this set of songs. He was not expecting them to be funny.
Uh-huh.
Like they're really intense, really raw, really vulnerable songs. And in some crowds, it comes across as funny, like there are giggles in the audience. And I've always thought that's really interesting, because like what happens if you're not trying to be funny, but somebody laughs at you or laughs at the thing you're saying?
Right.
I mean, it's equally awkward.
That's the risk of being sincere, I guess. You know, I mean, I think that's why a lot of comedians like to hide behind comedy, because if they got up there and just said, hey, I'm really sad, then it just doesn't work. But then again, you've picked the perfect album to talk about, where somebody said, hey, guess what? I've been going through some shit that is possibly killing me now, might kill me eventually. I wanted almost to kill me at one point because I was sick of it. And mm-hmm. she makes so much. I don't know. And again, it's not like, you know, it's not like a laugh riot the whole time, but it is consistently funny. And that's,
oh, yeah.
That is magical.
Oh, yeah. It's truly amazing how she does that.
And there's part of me that I'm listening to. I'm like, man, I wish I was in the audience. Another part of me is like, I don't know if I could have handled being in the audience, but I am glad that there's a recording out there. Because I honestly, until you suggested it for the show, and you know, I'm super picky about it has to be on vinyl. They released this on vinyl, so I was obviously fine to talk about it. I hadn't listened to it until you picked it on here, and I had been waiting to, and finally had an excuse. And I'm like, geez, I don't know what I was waiting for. This is too good.
Right.
It's really
I'm glad. Good. I'm glad. You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. And I will re-listen to it. It's one of those things where I really want to pick it apart. I'd rather pick it apart with her in the room, but I really want to pick it apart.
Well, you know, it's really funny. You talk about re-listening to it. So on a different tour, a different music tour, Sometimes I've got a couple friends who are musicians who will just call me up and say, hey, you want to like hop in the car and join me on my tour down to Portland really quick? And I was with my friend Shelby Earle. She's a musician from the Seattle area. And she had a couple shows down in Portland. And on our way back from Portland, it's like we're driving really late at night. And she also loves to listen to comedy when she's driving on these shows, especially at night, because it engages your brain in a different way than music does. Mm-hmm. And so you have to actually actively listen and stay awake. So it's like 1 a.m. and she was like, hey, you got any fun comedy albums you want to listen to? And I was like, have you heard Tig Notaro's live album? And she was like, no. So we listened to it and we pull up to my house just as her album ends. And we both look at each other and go, wow, that was a really, really honest moment that she and that the three of us, Tig, myself and Shelby, had together. And it was a really interesting way to say goodbye at 2 a.m. to go like, wow, cancer, death. And it hits you in a different way, because the first time I remember listening to it, I just loved it. It was just pure joy listening to it. It was just so refreshing. And the second time I listened to it, I think I was in a different place in life, and I heard it and it just sank really deep.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So watch out.
Yeah. She's so, you know, and maybe it's the quote unquote fortune of these four horrible things happening in a row, but she had so much to talk about. I don't know how she gets the emotional weight of this across without being maudlin, which she would have every excuse to be, by the way. She had every excuse to be as self-revelatory as she wanted up there, as unfunny as she wants. She has every excuse to be unfunny if she wants to. And yet she has the fortune also of being with an LA audience where she gets to say, just picking on the people who are so upset for her and saying, don't worry, you'll be all right. I don't know if I will be, but you'll be fine. And just, oh my God, just, it's so, I don't know, like you could say, oh, it's so very true and so raw, but at the same time, it is equally guarded as any intelligent comedian can do. She is separate from it.
When I was talking to this friend of mine, she was like, oh my gosh, I'm sure you've heard about these funny cancer greeting cards. And I go, whoa, you're sure? I've heard about funny cancer greeting cards. I was like, I just got diagnosed. I didn't just go out and learn all about the subculture and start buying knickknacks and like, no, I don't know about the funny cancer greeting cards. I just don't know. I just got diagnosed. And, you know, I was just thinking, the doctor's like, you know, you have cancer. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go Google that. Cancer, what is that? Doc, I couldn't find anything but these funny... the only thing I can find is funny cancer greeting cards.
You know, it's interesting. So in my podcast, we talk a lot about bravery and brave things. And something that, or a repetitive theme that I see come back and back and is boundaries, mm-hmm. and how important boundaries are when we're being brave and vulnerable. Because there's this, you know, you can be brave within yourself, to yourself, towards yourself, like admit to yourself that you actually want to get a divorce.
Sure.
Or you can have you can break that boundary and reveal it to someone else, or pick or use a different kind of boundary to choose who you're going to reveal that new truth to. So, but comedy is a whole nother breed of boundaries. And it's almost hair-raising for me to try to fully understand all of that. Mm-hmm. But what do you think, because I know that this is true, that comedians will hide behind their comedy emotionally. And why do you think that is?
It's a good question. You know, and this is speaking from somebody who's not a stand-up, but who is a comedy writer and a performer for a long time And again, it's one person's opinion, specifically one white guy's opinion. But it's if I can at least talk from my perspective, the typical thing that you hear is, by the way, I love that you're interviewing me. You turn the tables. Not everybody can do that. I usually catch it. But it's a defense mechanism. That's a common thing that you hear. And as a defense mechanism, it either quickly or slowly, but out of necessity, becomes a security blanket. And so it's such a, depending on where it came from, because, you know, I hear on this show a lot, the story you'll hear is, oh, well, I made somebody laugh for the first time, or, you know, I figured out how a joke worked for the first time. But there's also, there's equally, I think, those situations where people sort of forget, and they're strong with me, is, you know, somebody treated me like crap for the first time, and the first time I said something that I thought was super clever that shut them down, even if they didn't understand it. It can be this weapon, but it's weird that it's also this thing that you can hide behind at the same time. Because, you know, we're all a bunch of super sensitive little babies, you know.
We are.
I'm speaking for myself, I guess, but I at least know a lot of comedians are. And I know that musicians bear their hearts in this completely different way. And I wonder how it compares.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of people would say that I've had some really interesting social media moments where I have gotten super vulnerable and did not intend to get that vulnerable in, you know, in whatever like Facebook Live video I was doing. And so I can be really vulnerable in public, or to a lot of people, but at the end of the day, I'm still choosing, like I still have that control and that choice of who and how I'm going to be vulnerable. But a lot of people I know, like a lot of friends my close friends know me to be very reserved, even though I'm very much vulnerable in public with certain things.
Yeah, you know, and I have that same thing, and when sometimes, and I then wonder again for myself only, is it my ego? Does it need to be publicly like acknowledged that I've got these problems? You know, and I've always been curious about if that's the part of me that I don't know, but I know what you're talking about in terms. Now, when you say that, is that like I'm like vocally, verbally addressing my audience, or am I playing a song for them, or both?
Both.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, are you familiar with Myers-Briggs at all?
No.
Okay. So I am an INFJ, which means that I am an introvert, and I intuitively feel judgments throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And it's supposedly, according to all the Myers-Briggs experts out there, INFJs are 1% of our population.
Okay.
So for a lot of my life, my response or my reactions to the world has always felt a little bit out of place. But one thing, INFJs are frequently artists because they just make for really good extroverted feelers. Basically, like we express our emotions outside of ourselves, sometimes before we even know what our emotions are. So I think that that's what happens when I do when I am at a show or like I'm externally sharing my emotions, very deeply. And I think that's what makes INFJs really good artists and comedians and thinkers and feelers. We wear a heart on our sleeve, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it is really important to still maintain those boundaries. Otherwise you're just so raw all the time and it's exhausting.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, the instinct of the comedian is to take anything you've just said and immediately either wipe it clean or make fun of everything you've just said. We can't leave it hanging. I feel like, I don't know if that's the same for music. I feel like music, and again, could be wrong here, but music's like, hey, I just ended on this chord and I made my point and I didn't go out of my way to just deny everything I said just for a laugh or just because I can't handle emotion.
Right. Well, you know, one of my favorite songwriting instructors is Pat Pattinson. He's at Berklee School of Music. And he's got some awesome YouTube videos. So if there's any like budding songwriters out there, just look for Pat Pattinson on YouTube. He's got some awesome lectures you can watch. But one of my favorite things he says is tools, not rules. So you mentioned like ending on a chord.
Sure.
That is a tool that you can use to punctuate your song, your point. Or you can break that rule and end your song on a completely different chord, and it ends the song with a question mark.
Sure, sure, okay.
So there's, if you can see those musical boundaries, and even this can happen still, I imagine this would happen with comedy shows and comedy routines, that if you can see the your comedy as tools and not necessarily like they must laugh at this corner and then we will turn right and I will take them down this path and they will, if you can see your craft as tools and a set of tools to prove and support your point, then your point comes across a lot stronger, even if it is a question mark.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that Tig does really, 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 really well, is she knows that the comedy is just a bunch of tools and not rules.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's... It is a non-traditional set, and it is all, should point that out too, it's 31 minutes straight of her talking. It is not there. You couldn't sit and break this up and here's her chunk on this, here's her chunk on that. You couldn't do that. Because she, I love the one point too, where she's like, I'm going to go back to the cancer now, because yeah. She's basically tired of the other stuff. And she's like, I want to, and she's also got some really solid jokes to tell about it. And she's, I don't know, there's some really brilliant stuff where she's, she is, like I said, she's peppering little hints in there. And again, I don't think it was planned, but the thing about the bee, she has planted a seed, and it gets, you know, definitely gets harvested at the very end of the whole thing. I'm curious, as a musician, and maybe this is just a very silly question, but I mean, is there anything similar if you're doing a song, or I don't have the question fully formed, but is there a comparison when you're writing a song? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, there can be.
Little seeds like that.
Yeah, there can be. I mean, oh my gosh. Now, of course, all the examples that I would have are like escaping me. But a lot of times, you know, that's what I would call a full circle moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she planted a seed at the beginning about bees on the freeway, you know, saying, oh, I had this joke about bees on the freeway, but I can't tell that anymore. And then she gets to the end and tells the joke, and it like ties the whole performance up in a nice, neat little bow, or messy bow in her case. But you can reference things at the beginning of your song and then do that again. There are some songwriters who will end the song with the first two lines of the first verse.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of remind you where everything came back again. There are a lot of similarities between public speaking or comedy and songwriting. And there's a lot of similarities between, I think there's a lot that marketers and advertisers have to learn from comedians and singer-songwriters and other artists as well, because, you know, craft and our craft gives us unique perspective on how to make connections in the world, and the rest of the world needs that. You know, like if we're really trying to prove a point or like tell a really sad, sappy story, sometimes the song is the only thing that's gonna help you do that. Make time stand still and make you really feel how sad it is, or make you really feel how awesome it is to celebrate that one awesome moment, you know?
Yeah.
So I think comedy does that too. You're able to like, I've seen some tactics from comedians. They, you know, present a point and then they just drill that mine like a mile deep, and they have joke after joke after joke after joke. And by the end of the thing, you're so you're almost tired
yeah.
of the subject. And then they come back up to the surface and, you know, say the first thing again. And you're it's almost feels like a breath of fresh air. But they've said their point. They've made their peace. You know,
thank you. Now I feel bad that I don't have more tragedy to share. I'm honestly tapped out. Like, that's all that happened to me. That's it. Maybe I could try and... I wrote something, you know, what I've been talking about over the past, week and a half. And I just wanted to share it, and I really didn't feel like I could just tell normal jokes. I really appreciate you guys barreling through it, and I hope that you're going to do okay. Are you doing better?
Is there a similar moment for you going back to when you first either realized you were going to be a musician or wanted to be, or that you loved music or had an aptitude for it? Is there a single sort of spark moment, or was it just as it is for a lot of us that music is always a presence and then eventually you just kind of grew into it?
I mean, there are a couple series of it. There are like different iterations of those moments. I did grow up in a family that had a lot of music around. My mom is a piano and voice teacher. So there was always music around. But there was a couple moments in high school and in junior high where I was watching some friend's band in their garage or something. And they were getting ready to play a show, and they actually were like living wage musicians, uh-huh. You know? And they weren't great. I remember thinking, these guys aren't that great, but they're making a living off of this. That is so cool that that's possible. And it was that connection of like, oh my gosh, this is a thing I could do. Wow. Okay. I'm going to file that in and use that later.
Yeah.
So there were a couple of moments like that, that really told me that the profession was a possibility.
See, yeah. That's it, you know, and that, there we go. I was hoping we would find a similarity, because there are a lot of comics who tell that story and other artists, but I think specifically comics, where it's like, you're watching it and you're like, oh man, I either that looks like fun, but it all seems like something I could do, or that looks like that could be fun, but they're not great at it. I think I might be better at this, and I haven't even done it yet. Like you always get this. It's cocky, I think, but I think it's also necessary. That's the little pinch, that little pinch of ego that you need to be like, oh, maybe I could do something like that. The making a living thing never occurred to me, and I like that as a musician. You're like, hey, wait a minute, this is feasible. You know?
Well, I think before that specific iteration of, you know, that realization, before then it was, I always knew that music always would be in my life in some way or another. But it was that moment of, oh, I could pay taxes using this. I watched Chelsea Handler's show, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And she's constantly, you know, she always refers back to the days when she was like crashing in somebody else's hotel room because she didn't have enough, you know, dough for her own hotel room, or, you know, the days when she was a waitress, and, you know, how now she just wants to pay it forward and all this. And I think that happens on the musician side of things as well, you know. The phrase "a rising tide lifts all boats,"
mm-hmm.
and it's very much true in the music world as well.
All right, so we're talking about it's unusual that we get to talk about a newer album that's on vinyl, and we already discovered there wasn't a whole lot of comedy in terms of nothing to listen to in the house. So you had the kind of maybe the typical stuff that I would watch too, like you had your sitcoms, you had your whatever. Your parents, or at least your mother, was musical. Mm-hmm. What was your first exposure to, because you clearly have an interest in and an ability to analyze comedy that not everybody has. What was your first comedic exposure where it became a thing that you were interested in thinking about rather than just enjoying? If that's even something you can nail down.
I mean, we can go back to sitcoms to some degree. So I grew up in a family that was not really pro TV. We didn't watch a lot of TV. In fact, I'm sure my sisters would either kill me for saying this right now, and I'm pretty sure my parents aren't listening, so I'll just go ahead and say this. Whenever mom would go out grocery shopping, the three of us, I'm the oldest of three girls, and so the three of us would like immediately, like once we heard the garage door shut, we would like run and go like sit in front of the TV and just watch whatever was on. And then we'd have like whoever was closest to the garage door would like be waiting to listen for the garage door opening, which would give us like 3 minutes to have one of us pick a magazine and go in the other room, and the other one to go back in their room. So we had like a plan for how we would, you know, avoid the iron fist. So, anyways, but a lot of times during the time of day that would happen would be like when Friends was on, which was also on our do not watch list as a family. And I was actually just rewatching a couple of those Friends episodes the other day. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, some of these jokes are really crude.
Yeah.
No wonder my mom wouldn't, you know, like, so comedy was this like thing that I couldn't have in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
It was the thing that was frowned upon. And of course, me being like an oldest authority breaking, you know, rebel, I was completely enthralled.
Sure.
So I've always had this kind of like bad girl intrigue into comedy. But I also, you know, my parents are very much, we always had an international student at our house for Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
My dad's an international marketing research professor.
Interesting. Okay.
So we would always have these foreign exchanges between different countries. And I've lived abroad in a couple different countries as well. So I have that analytical brain to see the differences between my home and their home.
Mm-hmm.
And that also happens in comedy too. I think a lot of people make jokes out of those kinds of juxtapositions, like Tig does. You know, she sees these differences and these almost a fault in, she kind of pokes fun at the comedic scene without saying it, you know? So she's highlighting this like starkness in her culture and in her community and makes a commentary and a joke out of it. And I think that happened a lot around our dinner table as well. So I really resonate with the comedians who can do that, who can take the differences that they see in the world and put an interesting perspective on them.
Yeah, you know, you make a good point that's when that's done well, it's great. When it's done poorly, it's every other comedian. You know, they all think that they're making,
or it's just,
you know?
Or it's just straight bullying.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is not funny.
No. Nope. Yeah, it's so, yeah, there's something really beautiful about the way, you know, her or any other comic does it, but she has a beautiful way, especially in this, again, this thing that could be so incredibly depressing. And is heartbreaking, but not sad. It doesn't feel sad to me. It just feels like there's just a lot going on. It's just emotionally very dense. And it's like one long song. It is like one long riff that goes all over the place, in and out. If, you know, I always like to ask my guests, you know, if you don't know Tig Notaro's material, you know, if somebody doesn't know Tig Notaro's material or maybe knows her from maybe seeing her on TV shows here and there, what's a good reason to give this album a listen?
Especially today, or in today being like our season of our nation,
mm-hmm.
There is a lot of strife happening There's a lot of pain, and there's a lot of really sucky, I don't know if we can cuss on this show,
absolutely,
but there's a lot of really shitty things that happen. Mm-hmm. And I think by listening to, and this is something that my podcast does, like I know that by listening to and hearing other people find their bravery, we will find our own. And the same thing happens in Tig's set here. It's if you're feeling like the world is really shitty, and it is, mm-hmm. Then listening to someone tell a really horrific experience in this way will make your own horrific experiences seem not necessarily so bad, but will give it some purpose somehow.
Yeah.
Which I think is all we can ask of our pain. You know, if we can use our pain and allow it to become something else other than just pain.
Yeah.
That's when comedy becomes really golden.
That is perfect. You know, actually you say that and I had wondered why, like, I had this weird feeling of melancholy listening to it. I'm like, it's the album, but it's also, as you say, a lot of shit going on right now. So I think like, I want to process this also in a better, a better mind space or whatever you want to say. Which is why it stands re-listening to. It's also like, you know, it's short, people. If for no other reason, it's half an hour, and it's a tight 31, as they would say. it's really great to listen to. I also really like the guy at the very end who shouts out, just tells her how awesome she's being. And I thought that was really sweet because she had two choices there. One was to dismiss him the way she'd been dismissing everybody else in her sweet way. The other one is just completely accept it and go along with it. And like, you can hear in her voice, she's like, oh, that meant something. That was really sweet. It's a very sweet moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's not often we get to talk about comedy that is also sweet and also poignant and also means something and also relevant. And I think this is a really wonderful choice, and I know it took us forever to get this together, mostly because of me, but I think it's good timing at the end of the day.
Oh, man. Great timing.
Let's go back to what else you've got to promote. Let's go back to your show, any albums, anything coming out. I don't know when this will release, but give us a general idea where we can find you everywhere online.
Sure. So I am found on emilyannpeterson.com mm-hmm. or barenakedbravery.com. They both go to the same place. Mm-hmm. And my podcast is on iTunes, probably like yours is. Mm-hmm. I know that is true. And I have an album that is available for pre-order, which is really exciting. That actually is, this is a funny, so the album cover is my naked body.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not occur to me until the day that I just released the pre-order that by having a pre-order campaign
mm-hmm.
with an album or for an album with my naked body as the cover, that I would be asking people to spread my naked body around the internet.
Hey, that's so, guts. That is guts right there.
Yeah, but it's unintentional guts. Like, I chose the album cover shot because I was like, oh my god, it's such a cool shot. I don't care whose body it is, it's cool.
Yeah.
And then when I released the pre-order, it just occurred to me, it was like this like wave of like gut, you know, like gut level. Oh no, what did I just do?
That's awesome. That is wonderful.
So that album is available for pre-order on my site as well. But yeah, I've got some really cool things coming up in 2017. So the best way anybody can stay in touch is to hop on my email list. And if you do that, I have gifts, coloring book, and a couple of songs you can have and everything. So yeah.
That's awesome. And on Twitter, you are Emily A. Peterson. Am I correct?
That is correct. And on Instagram, I'm Emily Ann Pete.
Perfect. I love it. Emily Ann, I apologize. I called you Emily in an email. Emily Ann, thank you very much for doing the show. This has been a lot of fun.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
If you're ever down in LA, you should come and visit, be on the show again. This is a ton of, and maybe since you didn't grow up with a lot of comedy albums, I may force you to listen to one of the albums in my collection just to see what you think. Because that I've been trying to get more people to do those episodes where you listen to an album neither of us have ever heard before, and then we go in blind, and it's kind of fun.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah. I'm totally game. In fact, you could just email me some albums right now. Anybody could. I'd be happy to listen to
them. Awesome. Yeah, please do. You can go to our website. Well, thank you again for doing this. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you guys very much for listening. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.
A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.